1027 Business with Michael Avery.
It's day 482 of the lockdown. We're still in a state of disaster. We're almost a failed state, and some are calling still for a state of emergency. The brand father, Jeremy Sampson, MD of Brand Finance Africa, is on the line. Jeremy, welcome. It's also the ANC's 10,000th day of being in power. Well, shortly, it'll be on Women's Day on the 9th of August. In 10,000 days, what has the ANC achieved? By my count, we've got failing SOEs, failing metros. We've got the Tony Yingeni story, the Baleka Mbete's faking driving licenses. We've got Sarafina. We've got Zuma. It's just failure everywhere you look.
Do you want to depress me before we even start the conversation? No. When you think of all those days, and yet so many people are still quick to say, oh, the fault was the apartheid government. No, there are so many people today. What is it? 50%? Of the population under the age of 24 in this country. They're all born free. And how many of them haven't got jobs? Well, let's not depress ourselves even further. We saw some of them and many of them in action last week because they've got nothing else to do. You know, it's unbelievable. People are saying they're pointing fingers. Let's take it on the chin and say, okay, we've messed up. Let's stop. Let's reroute ourselves, reassess where we are and move on. Now, all this talk of cutting down unemployment, what's unemployment done in the last 10 days? I believe it's gone up about 150,000 people. And that's more tragedy, more loss of income for, what, 1,000 people or more? It's an absolute tragedy the way the country is being run at the moment.
And watching BBC journalist Stephen Sacker of Hard Talk grilling Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula was just embarrassing, Jeremy, when Mbalula was asked about the post-apartheid failings of the ruling party. Rather than just admit them, he goes on again to blame apartheid. And as you said, you know, it's tiring. Reading Fani Titi in the Financial Mail this morning, the CEO of Investec, he said leadership has to have four ingredients for it to be credible. There have to be these four things: providing a swift response, providing a response of scale, communicating clearly, and having visible leadership. How do you think the president and his cabinet have fared on those four principles?
Well, to start with, most of them don't understand those four principles. And, you know, we hear from the president that he's got a scorecard, that people have targets, that ministries have targets, yet they're not shared in public. And this is where, in any business, you have transparency. If you're going to monitor the success of your brand, you draw up a scorecard. You draw up a scorecard where the whole exco is involved, from the financial to the marketing. And that way you have transparency, and you can mark things, and you can see what's going on. You and I know that any chief executive running a business, he can't blame something that happened 24 years ago, 30 years ago. He's got to take it on the chin, and he's got to sort it out now. And he's accountable to his shareholders now. No, sometimes things have gone on in the past, and let's face it, it happens, which are undesirable. People made the wrong decisions or whatever. But come on, guys, not back a quarter of a century and still blame it. Now's the time to take it on the chin, and I keep repeating that and saying, right, now we can't go on as we are. Yeah. Now we're going to change course. Whereas otherwise, we're going to have more and more of the same.
And we had that kind of leadership actually on display when the South African A-team lost to the Bulls. We had Coach Jacques Nienaber put up his hand and say, I'm the leader. It all starts and ends with me. He didn't speak about the players not pitching up or maybe taking the Bulls team, very well coached by Jake White, lightly. So there are some interesting parallels there. And I think after all the talk and after all the controversy, the warm-up games, the COVID-19 disruptions and bubbles, attention can now finally turn to this weekend and the first test between the Springboks and the British and Irish Lions. I'm absolutely salivating for this one. What makes the Lions brand so compelling that it's so far withstood the demands of the professional era? Because it's anachronistic, isn't it, to get these four countries to join together to tour every 4 years and to only come to one of the three Southern Hemisphere nations every 12. What is it about the brand that is so compelling?
Well, the big thing is they've kept it relevant. And you know, everyone knows that around the world of rugby, there are some major, major teams like the First Division, the Premier Division, if you like, and the Lions is part of that. When you look at any sport, no, it's about money, and increasingly today it's about money, And that money comes from the different sources. You know, match day is often now where you buy a ticket is much less than the other areas. And the other areas are broadcasting rights. And that's huge, of course. And then the commercial rights. And the commercial rights include sponsorship, but they include merchandise. Just having a quick look on one of the websites this morning, I looked at the merchandise of the Lions, and I see it's been offered at 33% off, a third off. Well, I'm afraid that doesn't say you very good things about the brand Lions. But other than that, we know that it's kept relevant, it's kept fresh, it plays wonderful rugby, it's often very attacking rugby, and it's entertaining. And it's camaraderie. I find it ironic that probably, I don't know, three quarters of the Springbok side are currently playing in England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland, and the rest are in Wales. Perhaps there might be one in Japan. But they all know each other, and it's camaraderie. And this is where they think of the historic battles they've had. And boy, we're going to have another one on Saturday.
Absolutely. I think you've touched on such an important point there about the brand remaining relevant. It's this story, and I think that's what fans buy into. It's just this compelling story, this epic quest to win against the odds in a foreign land that takes place only every 4 years. It's got that scarcity and rarity value, and obviously a tour that every single rugby player and every single rugby fanatic wants to be a part of in some way. And it's really tragic that it's going to be played with empty stadia, but that is the pandemic lay of the land that we're living in at the moment. Talk to me about the Springboks brand, because that's also a brand that's been around for almost as long. I think the Springboks have been around since 1891, the British and Irish Lions 1888, so they match each other almost. And Jeremy, you were the man who got the Springbok jumping the other way on the logo.
Yes, that got me into a bit of trouble, but during the run-up to the World Cup, which we won, I was very involved on the marketing and branding and design side, and working with Dr. Louis Late. And after the World Cup, he actually called me in and said, look, we're under huge pressure to either ditch the Springbok or to do something, and we have to do something quickly. And when I said quickly, he said, like, in the next 10 days. It was that urgent, and I think this is where, in fact, Nelson Mandela was very, very helpful, because he was supportive of the Springbok. And what we did, because we had no time, was simply have it, instead of jumping from right to left, turning it around from left to right. As I said to start with, if you want to get legal clearance and register the trademark in Australia, New Zealand and the UK and all the rugby playing places around the world, it's going to take you months, if not years. So we turned it around. We put the King Protea underneath, which was then the symbol of unity, and that became the new Springbok. We also explained that the Springbok had been around, as you say, for, what was it, best part of a century, and the fact that brands go through different phases. I actually wrote a little piece, which we put into a brochure, where we actually, for the first time ever, drew up the evolution of the Springbok logo so that you could see. Now, whilst a lot of people said it's an apartheid logo, we said, well, it goes way back, nearly 100 years. It represents lots of things. And look at the other brands around. We actually talked about some of the German brands that went through the Hitler era but have come out and are great, great brands today, like Volkswagen, like Boss and things like that. So this is where we argued that the Springbok brand had gone through a phase, but now it was entering a new phase, and it was, after all, one of the best-known brands of South Africa. Around the world, you say Springbok, people say South African rugby.
And that is the power of a brand to unite people. Nelson Mandela certainly knew that, and when he came in to assuage fears, particularly in the Afrikaner community around that Springbok brand, it showed what a true statesman and leader he is. Sadly, not many of those around at the moment. Jeremy, thanks for your time. We're going to have to leave it there.
1027 Business with Michael Avery.